have you to listen up again. Another episode of Good Day Health is about to hit your cerebellum and your cerebrum. Dr. Ken Kronhaus, who runs Lake Cardiology in Mount Dora, Florida, is here to go through the medical news of the week that he has researched. And I'll throw a couple of curves at him along the way. We'll get to the bottom of some of your medical questions, which can come to me at Twitter, at Doug Stephan, S-T-E-P-H-A-N. There are many different articles, many different journals. Ken goes through those every week, brings us the highlights. And the finest thing he found this week was how to put on a happy face with a happy song, and how great songs, music, is to our overall well-being. Yes, that's pretty much the summary. I don't mean to have a spoiler alert here, Ken, but isn't that the story?
That is basically the story. Music is very important to us, and creativity is important. There's some concerns that we're less creative than we've been in the past, and we need to really see what we can do about stimulating creativity. This is a serious medical study out of PLOS-1. And we do need more creativity. And what they discovered in this study is that listening to happy music may enhance our ability to be creative. Doug, in this study, happy music came from The Four Seasons and from Antonio Vivaldi.
Really? The Four Seasons, like the singing group, Cherry.
Exactly.
Really? And Vivaldi?
Yes.
That's like putting the 1910 Fruit Gum Company up next to Beethoven. Well, sort of the same sort of thing. And I bet you'd get, I find, and I bet you do too, you and I are about the same age, we find happiness, like we just have had a wonderful summer, and the music from this past summer, whether it was the current pop music or you go back to the 60s and 70s, there's just something about it that goes with the rest of the ambiance. And it brings me around, the reason I put it together here in our discussion of health, are people less sick in the summertime than they are in the winter? And is part of it, if the answer is yes, part of it because we like what goes on, we feel good about being in the good weather, and there is the mind-body connection for sure.
I think some of that is true, and you know, the bugs seem to be less active. Some of them, the viruses, seem to be more active in the colder part of the year. So there's probably some truth to that.
Mm-hmm. So
and just whatever music makes you happy, you know, it's something about the American Songbook, which I wasn't even alive when it came out, but I've discovered it as an adult, and it just puts a happy face on me.
Oh, yeah. But you can find all kinds of great pop songs from the 60s and 70s.
Absolutely.
Fabulous stuff.
The Beatles station is great.
I'm a girl watcher. I'm a girl watcher, watching girls go by.
Yeah, they just don't make it like that anymore.
My. All right. So that's one bit of research that comes to fruition that is important for us to know. Not that we didn't feel that way in some way, shape, or form, but the happier the music, the better off your
if
health.
If you're in a creative funk and just, yeah, you know, just put on some happy music and, yeah, and it may work.
Yep, there you go. All right, next up on the hit parade here of discussion items, the difference between big and tall and short and fat. I guess, I don't know, it makes a difference. I don't know if there's anything. I guess maybe when it comes to understanding what goes on in people who are taller, what goes on in their bodies, would you explain this, be thorough as you can be? Because I think there would be a lot of questions by just saying, okay, if you're short, you're going to be healthy. If you're tall, you're not going to be.
Well, it's not that simple. No. And this comes out of Circulation Cardiovascular Genetics this week. We know some of the risk factors, Doug, for developing blood clots in the deep veins. They include major surgeries, multiple trauma, heart attack, obesity, and lack of physical mobility, pregnancy, and hereditary factors. But now there's a new risk factor for blood clots in the veins. A large study of more than 2 million siblings suggests that taller people are at an increased risk of developing blood clots in the deep veins, while shorter people are less susceptible. And the average American height for a man is 5'10". The average American height for a woman is 5'5".
Really? So I'm below average, and so are you, in terms of height. What are you, 5'8", I think? 5'9"? How tall
5'9".
Are you? Yeah, and I'm 5'9". I used to be 5'9". I seem to have lost some of it along the way in the disc department in my back. So
not uncommon.
No, it isn't. No, I'm between 5'7", 5'8", somewhere in there. And so we're less than. Does that mean we need our weight to be less than? Weight's very proportionate, and that's kind of what we're talking about here, in a way. Weight is a factor. But if you're tall, the body has to work harder to pump the blood and stuff around. That just seems... I've never seen somebody who's really tall live to be really old. Have you? Kind of like the obesity question that comes up.
Well, it depends how you define really tall. You know, if you're talking about NBA basketball players, probably not. But also it depends on their weight. And I think that the weight is the key.
The weight is the key. All right, you got it. You heard it here first from Dr. Ken Kronhaus.
As I have told you, again, the weight is based on your height, so-called BMI, body mass index.
Right.
And for muscular people, it breaks down a little bit because muscle weighs more than fat. But for most of us, you know, our BMI, we want it under 25. And when it's over 25, that's overweight. When it's over 30, that's obese. And I've told you this several times. I've never met an obese 90-year-old male. I've met one or two obese 90-year-old females, but never a male.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So there it is.
And I've asked my colleagues. None of them have ever seen one. If you know one, I'd love to meet them.
Yep. It's not on the scale. Yep. Okay. So now let's move into one area. This study on dementia, older Americans. The good news here is that is it numbers actually or percentages of people? How do we interpret this data?
Yeah, you're so good, Doug. It's percentages.
It is.
And because that's an important part of this study. So let's talk a little bit about it. This is out of the JAMA, Journal of the American Medical Association, the neurology edition this week. Around the world, Doug, more than 47 million people suffer from dementia, and there are 7 million new cases developing each year. Dementia, it's an impairment of brain functions marked mainly by memory problems and personality changes. But the good news for America's seniors is that the rates of Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia have dropped significantly over the last decade or so. The reason for some of the decline may be that we're seeing the benefits of years of success in cardiovascular disease prevention. Although the rate of dementia has declined, the actual number of people with dementia is expected to increase dramatically as the population bubble, Doug, caused by baby boomers ages. Healthy lifestyle may help prevent dementia. People who exercise, eat a healthy diet, do not smoke, and avoid diabetes, they have a 35% less likelihood of getting dementia.
Yeah. All right. So, dementia, Alzheimer's, blood in the brain, fat in the brain, keeping the brain active. I've decided I'm going to go buy a whole bunch of games, and we're going to play games. Now, I do crossword puzzles mostly on the airplane when I'm traveling. But I think anything, and I'm trying to get more fat. The business would be, I think folks who are conscious of these things have a better chance of keeping out of the statistic report. Don't you? I mean, just being aware of what to do, the things. Some people just give everything over to the likes of you. They trust you, and that's swell, your clients, but you got to use some common sense. Dr. Ken can't be there to hold your hand every day. So you need to be observant and know what goes on, depending on whether you want to live a happy, healthy, long life or not. Some people don't care. I happen to care. I want to benefit from this experience I'm having here as long as I can, as long as I'm healthy. And that includes mental health. And so, you know, the business about having a lot of blood getting to your brain and the right fats and all that stuff, that must be, although you're a cardiologist, people must come to you with these questions from time to time, do they not?
Well, absolutely. You know, I have evolved into a cardiovascular preventionist, and this is so much keeping the circulation from head to toe healthy, and limiting dementia is the same preventive lifestyle that we use for lowering the risk of heart attacks, lowering the risk of stroke. And what you were alluding to is that brain health. Avoiding dementia is a lifelong pattern of healthy brain activity, brain behavior. So this is something, it's never too late to start, but the earlier you start and maintaining a healthy lifestyle will help you prevent this. So this is lifelong healthy brain behavior, and that's what's going to keep you out of all this havoc.
All right, and one of the ways to do it, one of the best ways to do it that Ken and I can recommend is to take a serious look, if you haven't already, at Super Beets, because the stamina that comes from it is legion, the blood flow getting into your brain and your muscles, but more importantly now we're talking about your brain. This is nothing but an enhancement to a good, long, healthy, happy life, it would seem, Ken, right?
Well, it also helps with lowering the blood pressure. We're talking now about Nobel Prize winning information from back in the 1988 era. It was a discovery, and then by 1998, it won the Nobel Prize so quickly after the discovery, because it's so important to the good functioning of the body. Nitric oxide, the third important gas, you need to continuously remake nitric oxide. It relaxes the blood vessels so the blood pressure stays down and keeps the circulation healthy. And it's also used to help the body communicate cell to cell from head to toe. If you don't continuously remake nitric oxide, the body just won't work well. Our friends at Neogenes, they make these wonderful saliva test strips. You can put just a little bit of your own saliva on it, see whether your level is adequate. If your nitric oxide level is low, Neo 40 helps get the maintenance level up. If you need a boost of nitric oxide for the afternoon fatigue, then get Super Beets. Doug will tell you how to get this.
All right. Bonus 30-day supply free. We'll start with that. When you're ordering for the first time Super Beets to get this activity going, the nitric oxide opening up your arteries so the blood flows to every part of your body that's so important. You need to have, whether it's your brain, your heart, your muscles, all of the body needs nitric oxide. The arteries open up with the nitric oxide, get the blood around. So you can get started with a 30-day supply free when you call 800-655-4183. Yep, that's the number to call. Take Dr. Ken's advice, 800-655-4183. And when you mention that number, you will get a you'll get the first shipment free. This is really, it's a fabulous. I can't tell how many people I have in my life that are on this and think that it is fabulous. Stamina, energy, it's the way to go. Super Beets, 800-655-4183. So what impact will the storms that are whipping around this time of year have on people in their health? Because mental health is connected to the physical well-being, and so a lot of people have anxiety and stress. You have some tips on how to reduce the anxiety, not only in adults, but in children as well, yeah?
Exactly. These severe storms are going to produce anxiety, and it's normal to feel scared, anxious, and nervous. You do not want to deny these feelings, Doug, but here are some tips to decrease your anxiety. Create a plan for evacuating your family if needed and put together a preparedness kit. Be informed. Get out that battery-powered radio ready, and this is when radio really shines. Get out that 1980s portable radio, and it will do you well. Talk it out. Share your fears with those who can offer emotional support, whoever that person is, relatives, friends, parents, whoever, kids, whoever you like to talk to. Accept what you cannot control. This is so important. Excessive worrying is not going to change anything.
Nope.
Except your emotional health.
It's the dumbest thing. And yet, how much time do all of us spend worrying about things that we have no control over? I mean, how worrying, is that going to stop a Category 5 hurricane
exactly
blowing at 180 miles an hour? I don't think so.
Exactly.
That's foolish. But it's, you know, it's easy to go there and hard to get out of there. So you think about it. And as we are now more and more embracing this philosophy of mind, body, and even the spirit, the mind, body, spirit connection in terms of your health and well-being, your mind will, that worry creates that stress, pushes up your blood pressure. You need to drink an extra glass of Super Beets, whatever. You know, it's if you do a little meditation night when you go to bed, read something that will relax you. And you know what else I found? You're going to laugh at this.
And we need to talk about the kids when we get a second.
Yeah, yeah, okay. I just I'm going to tell you that hemp oil is not that it's a new discovery, but it's newly available as a way to have yourself relax. It's a natural way. It's all. I'm going to grow hemp next year on the farm, and I'm doing lots of research as to what it can be used for. And hemp oils are fabulous for all kinds of things, including having a good, peaceful, natural night's rest. So there you go. All right. So what do we do? 60 seconds on reducing the storm anxiety in children.
Exactly. Try to take the temperature of your kids' anxiety, and mom and dad, just be at least one step more calm than your kids. That's so important to set the right example. So be calm and support them. Supportive. Tell the kids that thunder will not hurt them and storms are a normal part of nature. Talk about storms matter-of-factly. The kids seem afraid of storms, but they really want to learn more about them. Help children face their fears by reading about storms and watching videos, and help them learn they can handle a fear and other uncertainties of life. And lastly, if all else fails and the anxiety accelerates, get the help of a mental health professional.
All right. Yep. What separates this conversation with Dr. Ken from others is his ability to look at the journals of medicine that are reporting on a lot of conventional studies and conventional information to summarize it and bring it to a point where you can really understand what the value of it is. Thus is the case with this new report on the cancer pen. And I'm not sure I'm familiar with that or the concept, Ken. So would you explain that as we go through the information?
That's because this is the medical breakthrough of the week, and this is something brand new but extremely exciting and practical. This comes out of Science Translational Medicine, published this week. A new cancer pen promises to help surgeons, Doug, immediately detect and completely remove cancerous tumor tissue without having to send samples off to a lab for testing while the patient languishes on the operating table. The mass spec pen, as it's called, it's a handheld device that allows doctors to test in real time whether tissue is cancerous or not, delivering results in about 10 seconds. The pen will make it easier to surgically clear out all the cancer cells surrounding a tumor. The pen's accuracy currently stands at more than 96%, and the new device could also shorten cancer surgeries. You know, there's something that's incredibly frustrating, because what happens now, you have surgery, and they'll do a biopsy, they'll send the tissue off to the pathologist to look at, and everybody waits in the operating room with uneasiness, not knowing whether it's malignant or benign, and often you get back a benign diagnosis, surgery's done, you don't have to do any more surgery, and it's not unheard of that the pathologists study it more, they do additional testing and staining, and voila, what do you find out? The initial call was not correct. It was actually malignant, and the patient has to go back for a second surgery. This happens. And this new pen will avoid that also.
Yep. The cancer pen. So where can people find out? If you Google cancer pen.
It's called the MASS, M-A-S-S-P-E-C pen. And you hope your surgeon, who if he or she is doing a biopsy on you for possible cancer, ask your surgeons about this. Hopefully they have it. It's coming out soon.
Well, how do they, don't they get these? How do you decide what tools? Let's take us inside. Give us some insight into how it is that you equip your clinic, Lake Cardiology, the tools that you have there, millions and millions and millions of dollars of investment to be able to understand what's going on in people's circulatory system and their bodies. How do you decide? Does the government say if you're going to practice this kind of medicine, you have to have these tools? Or is every person able to pick his or her own tools?
Well, I'll tell you inside, a little bit of inside baseball here. There's basically two kinds of doctors. One who uses essentially what they learned in training and transforms that to their practice so that their training has a huge impact on what tools they use, and they learn that from wherever they trained. And then there's another group of physicians who evolve that as they're in practice and continue getting exposed to new techniques, and from either meetings or going to work with the professors and academics who are really pioneering these new techniques, and also sometimes there's even new techniques pioneered in private practice. It happens. It does happen. And this other group of people who continue to very much evolve their skills, and it depends what kind of doctor you have.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like to think that I had a good doctor or two. Or three or four.
So do I.
Yeah, me too, especially. Okay, next up in the research department, the back and forth, the up and down. Men, I understand why you could be concerned or confused. I'm very good at watching my own health. Ken will tell you that I'm very conscious, very aware, very interested in getting my tests two or three times a year, watching them, having Ken monitor them, Jack monitor them. And so the back and forth, one guy says, don't bother the PSA test. It's overrated. Another guy says, geez, you need to get the PSA test every year to know what's going on in your prostate. And this thing has been going back and forth like a football for the last 4 or 5 years. What the heck do we believe? Here's a new one that says we better be paying attention to the PSA test.
Well, let me put this all in perspective, because a lot of us, myself included, have been uncomfortable with this going back and forth. But let me try to explain to you why this is such a difficult egg to get your arms around, because it is a little confusing. But this was published this week in the Annals of Internal Medicine, very reputable medical journal. And what happened is, this government body, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, made the controversial move in 2012 to recommend against PSA testing altogether. And that shook up the whole world in cancer prevention. But now, analysis of two major trials on the prostate cancer screen shows it cuts men's risk of dying from the disease. Yeah. Early tumor detection using the prostate-specific antigen, the PSA blood test, lowers a man's risk, Doug, of prostate cancer by 25% to 32%. However, there's still a good chance that many men will wind up being treated for prostate cancer that would not have killed them if they get the PSA. In fact, it's predicted that if you do get your PSAs, that five times more men will be operated for cancer that would have not killed them, because it just grows so slowly, some of this prostate cancer, than those who are diagnosed with the PSA and actually had their life saved. So the decision about PSA screening will continue to be an individual choice for each man after consulting with his doctor, because it is a personalized decision. When you get the PSA done, because a lot of prostate cancer, not all, but some, is very slow growing, and if you do nothing, so-called watchful waiting, yeah, it will be fine. And when you check the PSA, you end up picking up these tumors, and some of them get operated on. It's sometimes hard to know whether in the long run they would have been life-threatening, but you end up treating them. And this study is trying to say that, yes, your risk of dying will go down 25 to 32%, but your risk of being operated goes up a lot on tumors that would not have killed you. So it's hard to thread this needle.
All right. So let's again sort of put this into perspective for everybody. And this is something women and men both, for obvious reasons, need to know about this. Like, we need to know certain things. Men need to not be so stupid about women's health and knowing what's going on in your spouse's body, the lover, whoever it is that's in your life that's important to you, your daughter maybe. But men are oblivious to this and a lot of other things, unfortunately. And so are some women, frankly. If you have a partner and you love the partner, you want to keep them here with you as long as possible, this is the kind of stuff you better be paying attention to on both sides. The understanding of what really the PSA test is and what goes on with your prostate, the fact that it may be growing a little in accordance with your age. I don't know. I'm not uncomfortable telling people what my number is. It's sort of bounced around since I've known you, Ken, to 0.4 to a 0.8. I don't think it's ever been any higher than that. For that, I'm extraordinarily thankful.
Over four is where we get concerned.
I'm saying mine's a 0.4
exactly
to a 0.8, and if he gets over four, so where's yours?
It's low. It's also under. It's in the same range where yours is.
Right.
And the other thing is so-called PSA velocity. If it is low, but it's increased quite a bit from 1 year to the next, that also
yes.
might suggest something.
Yeah, right.
So-called
I remember
PSA
mine went up,
velocity.
Remember when mine went up like 0.2 points, and I was all shook up about. And then it kind of went back down again.
It did.
For whatever the reason. But when you get your digital anal checkup and the doctor actually sticks his finger in there, not to be too undelicate, but that's what they do to find out how big it is, they'll tell you. It's a what?
It might mix a little in the blood.
Yeah. But it also, it does grow a little as you get older. And so the doctor, if he or she is skilled, I can't imagine a woman doing it, but I suppose there are women doctors that do.
There are women urologists.
Yeah. So anyway, doing the exam to feel how swollen or not it is another way of not kidding yourself. You know, you say, oh, it's very impaired. It is, but lasts about 14 seconds. Somebody's sticking their finger in there is not comfortable and not pleasant, but you certainly know more from having that exam. That's about the only way, other than x-rays, and those can be dangerous, or MRIs, you can really find out what's going on, right?
And an ultrasound.
An ultrasound, right, exactly, which is the tool that you use a lot. All right, so there's our word on that. Peanut butter. Next up, huh? Yeah, peanut butter. I want to know about whether it's healthy or not. I also want to know about allergies and all that other stuff, because there's been a lot of information about how to prevent it. We'll find out from Ken's point of view whether if you're a pregnant lady or you want to be pregnant and you're hoping your child's not allergic to peanuts, just eat the peanuts while you're pregnant and then the child shouldn't have a problem with them. Well, let's find out if that's true or not in a moment. But first, more on one of our favorite subjects here, and that's Super Beets and what it does for you. The 90 non-GMO beets that taste great that you take as you mix the teaspoon of Super Beets into a glass of water or maybe into a smoothie. This week I've been doing nothing but fruit smoothies, Ken. I take the fruit, some of it is fresh, some of it's frozen. I put it in this little coconut water or juice or whatever you call it, put that in there, and I've got some stuff that Meredith found that's all natural. The components are more fruit-based, but they're not the usual. It's fruit and kale and that kind of stuff mixed up. And then put the protein in, put the Super Beets in, and voila, you got something that really is good for you. So why do we need to keep doing this every day? If we do it once in a while, isn't that as good as doing it every day?
Well, you need to do it every day because you need to make sure that your body's nitric oxide level maintains an adequate level. Just like filling up your gas tank in your car, you have to keep doing that or it'll get run out. And nitric oxide, it's used continuously in the body and it needs to be remade. You need the building blocks to make it. Nitric oxide is very important, allowing the 60,000 miles of circulation in your body to relax, open up, let the red blood cells in, deliver oxygen from head to toe. If you don't have enough nitric oxide, the red blood cells can't get the oxygen from head to toe. Also, it's used to signal, to let the cells from head to toe talk to each other. And you need the building blocks. You need to check your level. This company, Neogenis, they make a saliva blood test that allows you to check your level of nitric oxide. And then if it's low, you can take their Neo 40 product to get the maintenance level up.
Yep.
They have another product, Super Beets, that will allow you to deal with that mid-afternoon blah that you get for the highly caffeinated beverages. This is a great substitute, a natural way to get your energy level up with Super Beets.
Take Ken's advice. Don't be silly. This is something that is a very productive way. I'm very proud that we've had our association with them for 3 years. It's nothing but good, nothing but smart to call 800-655-4183 and get on board the Super Beet bandwagon. You get a 30-day supply free shipping. That book called Beat the Odds comes with it so you can learn about the power of beets and how this all makes sense. You learn about Mother Nature a lot by reading this book. 800 800- 855-4183. That's for Super Beats, the efficacy of peanut butter. I happen to like peanut butter because I don't like to eat meat and, well, most of these, whether it's almond butter, peanut butter, walnut butter, all the good sources of protein, right? So what could be a problem with peanut butter?
Exactly. Yes, peanut butter is healthy, but just make sure there's no added sugar and no added trans fat. And if you're counting calories, just be careful because this is not a low-calorie food.
But protein-wise.
Excellent.
Can you get, can we not just focus on peanut butter? Can we, all these butters, almond butter and walnut butter and the stuff that's made the same way, peanut butter, just use different nuts. Isn't it all pretty much the same in terms of its benefits for you?
If it's just the plain ingredient, but with some of these concoctions, they add sugar, they add some trans fats in for taste. You just have to make sure you read what's in it. But if it's just the natural individual product, you're doing well.
So then let's go one step further to all of this hoopla about peanut allergies and whether what I read some time ago, and I forget whether you turned me on to this or Jack did or somebody else, somehow or other, I became interested when Megan was pregnant about peanut allergies and all that stuff. And I said to Megan, just eat peanuts. Well, eat all kinds of nuts when you're pregnant and it won't bother the baby. I don't know whether I was talking like a guy with a paper butt or not, but it seemed to work because the kid doesn't have any allergies to anything.
Well, let's talk about what a mother can do regarding peanuts and allergies in general to food, Doug. As long as the mother's not allergic to the food, it's fine for the mother to eat the food. Mm-hmm. But you're not going to pass along protection to your child by just eating the food. A lot of this is genetic, whether the child is going to be allergic to the peanuts. A lot of it has to do with the genetics. But the one way that has been shown to lower the likelihood is to breastfeed at least 4 and ideally up to 6 months. And that has been shown to help with these food allergies.
All right, so word to the wise is sufficient. Exposing, it's kind of like, we have this whole big hoopla about taking vaccines and stuff, and you and I have had conversations over the years. I was talking yesterday to a doctor who specializes in treating children with autism, and he says that not only are the vaccines a problem here, but people understanding what really is going on. Because when you get, there isn't enough study that has been done. It's kind of like when we say, when you go to your doctor, tell the doctor what other medications you're on. Like when you prescribe somebody something, you know what else they're taking, right? Don't they?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So you're not going to give them something that's
unless it's a medical emergency and they're unconscious, I would never want to give anybody anything unless I knew everything else they're taking.
Right. Okay.
Including prescribed and non-prescribed.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. It's the same thing for supplements. So this fellow says that there are a couple of studies, important studies that have been done or in the works that will suggest that all the vaccines do not mesh well with the chemistry of many children. All our chemistries are different. We're not all the same. The Genome Project says we are compounded the same, but we still have different reactions to different things in our bodies. And that a lot of these vaccines, the newer ones, are contraindicated. Does that sound like the right term?
That's the medical word.
All right. So, and that what happens is that your brain gets swollen. Literally, your brain swells up with the wrong combination of these chemicals in your body, and that's what's causing all this autism and ADHD and all that other stuff. Does that make sense to you?
Well, it's a theory, and the question is, you know, what's the data supporting the theory? Because, you know, we don't want to make people really fearful of these vaccines because...
Well, but there are some, I think, to be fearful of, aren't there? You and I both got vaccines.
In 30 seconds, it's hard to talk about this, but you don't want to make people so fearful of vaccines that they don't vaccinate, but you want to think about it because there are a lot of vaccines out there, and that, I think, is the issue. But there are also some vaccines that, you know, my child got most of the vaccines.
Yeah. Well, I think Miles got most of the vaccines. I think my kids at the time got most of the vaccines, but they keep being added to and added to and added to. And
something to think about and to study and to be cautious about.
Right. Thank you. Dr. Ken Kronhaus, Good Day Health, blogtalkradio.com/Good Day Health.